From the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Coming up this hour,
the yen slides as the Bank of Japan cuts its inflation outlook.
Stocks in China steady following another round of stimulus measures.
The Fed probes Deutsche Bank over suspicious transactions.
And shares of IBM surge after earnings top estimates.
Lawmakers will hold separate votes that could reopen the government. Plus, reports of a drone led to flights suspended briefly at Newark Airport. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Mariano Rivera, the first to ever get every vote as he goes to the Baseball Hall of Fame with his Yankee teammate, Mike Mussina. Lost for the Islanders, and Serena Williams lost the Australian Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Use an integrated investment account from Interactive Brokers to earn, borrow, spend, and invest globally from one account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
And we're seeing a mixed picture for global stocks this morning. 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7 points. Dow futures up 77. NASDAQ futures up 20. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. So is the FTSE 100. And the CAC in Paris is up 0.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan down 0.1% today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong little changed. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.75%. Yield on the two-year, 2.59%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 45 cents to $53.46 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed, up 90 cents to $12.84.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.1358. The yen, 109.63. Nathan.
Karen, Japan and China set the tone for trading in Asia today, with the Bank of Japan cutting its inflation outlook and China offering additional liquidity to banks. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, the Nikkei 225 closed down by 0.1% in Tokyo. The yen fell after the Bank of Japan left its policy unchanged at its first meeting of 2019, but lowered its inflation forecast for a fourth consecutive time in its quarterly outlook report. In China, the CSI 300 gave up earlier gains to close lower by 0.1% as officials once again opened the stimulus taps. The PBOC offered $38 billion of liquidity to banks via a new targeted operation. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Uncertainty over the U.S.-China trade dispute continues to permeate global markets. White House advisor Larry Kudlow says negotiations next week will be key.
We're saying to them, if you play by the rules, if you open up your economy and let Americans come in, we will have a huge flood of export sales across the board.
Kudlow's striking an optimistic tone ahead of the talks. However, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam doubts some of the big issues can be resolved before the 90-day truce expires.
I hope something positive will come out from the latest round before this three-month period expires. But I'm not too optimistic about a lasting deal.
And the next round of talks begin 1 week from today in Washington.
Well, in the UK, Parliament is moving closer to a plan to delay Brexit. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The UK's opposition Labour Party is now increasingly likely to support a proposal to extend the March 29th Brexit deadline if Prime Minister Theresa May fails to renegotiate a divorce agreement. That's according to the party's chief finance spokesman, John McDonnell. Now, if Labour does back the proposal in the British Parliament, it's far more likely to win the support to make it pass through the Parliament. And if that happens, Theresa May will be barred from taking Britain out of the European Union without a deal. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. We're getting word this morning that Deutsche Bank is the target of a probe from the Federal Reserve. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Karen, what may be one of the biggest money laundering scandals ever just got more intense. Sources say the Fed's examining whether Deutsche Bank's U.S. operations adequately monitored funds from an Estonian branch of Danske Bank. Danske has admitted that much of about $230 billion that flowed through the tiny Estonian outpost may have been dirty. It used correspondent banks such as Deutsche Bank to move money abroad. The U.S. requires lenders operating under its jurisdiction to scrutinize clients and their dealings. Deutsche Bank said in an email there are no probes. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Shares of IBM are heading higher after earnings that beat estimates. Anurag Rana covers IBM for Bloomberg Intelligence.
One of their divisions called Global Business Services saw some very strong consulting numbers, which to us means that enterprise tech spending is very strong right now. And it's, you know, the follow-through effect from a very strong 2018.
IBM's also out with a positive forecast for 2019. That has shares up more than 6% in early trading.
On the docket today, earnings from two dozen companies in the S&P 500, including Ford Motor. Here with a preview is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The automaker disappointed investors at the end of 2018. Demand was under pressure and volume was down year over year in four of five regions. Bloomberg Intelligence says going forward, attention will turn to improved performance, with Ford continuing to push its product line toward trucks. Forecasts are for Ford to post a profit of 31 cents a share on revenue of nearly $37.9 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Jeff. And as earnings season rolls on, investors hoping for big gains in stocks need to dial back expectations. That's according to Goldman Sachs chief equity strategist Peter Oppenheimer.
Fundamentally, we do expect quite low profit growth over the course of this year across major equity markets, and I think that will cap the upside as well.
Stocks have started the year strong with a 5% gain for the S&P 500. Oppenheimer calls the rally a reaction to overly negative sentiment at the end of last year.
The markets are pricing quite a lot of uncertainty, and probably too much uncertainty on the economic front, which is why I think we've seen this recent rally, as some of the data hasn't been coming through quite as badly as the markets were pricing. But I think we're really in a relatively flat trading range for most markets over the course of this year.
The MSCI All Country World Index is up 5% this month, just behind last year's 6% gain over the same period. That hot start didn't endure last year, though, with the index slumping to an 11% loss by the end of 2018.
And S&P futures are up about 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 76 and NASDAQ futures up about 20. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Karen, thanks. It's 6:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is now allowing consideration of rival Republican and Democratic proposals for reopening the government. It comes as the shutdown has entered its 33rd day. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports, though, there are no guarantees that President Trump will go along.
McConnell has insisted he would not waste time, as he put it, voting on any measure that Trump opposed, and he initially said a Republican bill with all $5.7 billion for a border wall was the only measure Trump supports.
As I've stated consistently over the past month, that fact will earn it consideration here in the Senate.
That hard line appeared to soften, though, when he also scheduled a vote on a funding measure from the House after Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer blamed Trump and his party for demanding only their way to allow government funding.
Everyone knows that he and Leader McConnell are the only obstacles to opening it back up.
It appears neither bill may win enough votes to pass. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is said to be weighing a 2020 bid for a U.S. Senate seat in Kansas. A person familiar with the matter says Pompeo spoke with Senate Majority Leader McConnell and a GOP strategist. Flights into Newark Airport were suspended briefly yesterday after a drone was spotted along the airport's final approach path. Drones were seen about 3,500 feet up. LiveATC.com recorded a United Airlines pilot telling air traffic control about the close call.
We missed the drone by about 30 feet off our right wing, about a couple of seconds before you spoke to it.
The FAA prohibits drone use above 400 feet or within 5 miles of an airport without permission. The incident is under investigation. Los Angeles teachers have approved a contract deal between their union and school officials ending a 6-day strike. The leaders of Japan and Russia met in Moscow. Bloomberg's Isabel Reynolds has more from Tokyo.
A 25th meeting between Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and Russian President Vladimir Putin failed to bring about any substantial progress on a territorial dispute that has lingered since World War II. In a briefing after their meeting in Moscow, both leaders said the process would be difficult. They nonetheless agreed to continue trying to reach a deal, with their respective foreign ministers set to meet again next month in Munich. In Tokyo, Isabel Reynolds, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashar.
Nathan, Mariano Rivera's unanimous Hall of Fame vote finally puts an end to a tradition that almost everyone thought was silly. The idea that since the likes of Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Jackie Robinson, they didn't get every vote, no one should. This time, all 425 voters agreed about the greatest relief pitcher in baseball history.
Amazing, amazing. All I have to say is thank God for that. You know, I mean, has been a beautiful, long career with, to me, the best organization there is in baseball, the New York Yankees, and end up with this like that. It's amazing.
So was he on the field and off, most saves ever, but Rivera's most amazing stab was his postseason ERA. When facing the best teams, it was 0.70 in 141 innings. He gave up 11 runs. Mike Mussina was his Yankee teammate for 8 years. He just got in. So did Edgar Martinez in his final try and his first attempt, the late Roy Halladay, induction day in Cooperstown, July 21st. Stunner at the Australian Open, Serena Williams seemingly cruising to a quarterfinal win. She led Carolina Pliskova 5-1 in the third set and then lost the next six games, blew four match points. It spoils what would have been a rematch with Naomi Osaka in the semis. Osaka had that controversial win over Serena in the U.S. Open final last year. Six-time Aussie Open champ Novak Djokovic into the men's semis. He'll now face Lucas Pui, who upset the Canadian Milos Raonic. Islanders' five-game win streak came to an end. They lost 3-2 in a shootout in Chicago. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. In other sports news, hockey's going high-tech this weekend during All-Star festivities. NBC will showcase puck and player tracking during its broadcast of the skills competition Friday night. Then, as the centerpiece of a digital-only broadcast of the All-Star 3-on-3 tournament Saturday night, each player and puck will be fitted with a microchip. You can see everything from NASCAR-like bubbles over players' heads to skating and shot speed to ice time, even a small trail behind the puck. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Hyde Park Antiques and the 65th Annual Winter Show, featuring experts in fine art and antiques from around the globe, going on now through the 27th at the historic Park Avenue Armory.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are gaining alongside stocks in Europe as traders juggle the latest corporate earnings with moves to end the U.S. government shutdown and doubts over progress on trade talks. The yen sliding as the Bank of Japan cut its inflation outlook. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 6 points this morning. Dow futures up 68. NASDAQ futures up about 17. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32nds, yield 2.75%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.59%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.8% or 44 cents to $53.45 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.60 to $12.85 an ounce. The euro, $1.1363. The yen, 109.62. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Senate leaders have agreed to vote on rival proposals for reopening the government for the first time since the shutdown began last month, though it's not clear either measure can pass. Tomorrow, lawmakers are scheduled to hold separate votes on President Trump's plan that includes $5.7 billion for border wall funding, as well as a Democratic proposal that would reopen shuttered agencies through February 8th. In the NHL, the Islanders lost in a shootout to the Blackhawks 3-2. The Capitals lost in overtime to the Sharks. Former Yankees closer Mariano Rivera, baseball's all-time saves leader, has become the game's first unanimous Hall of Fame selection. Former Yankees and Orioles pitcher Mike Mussina also made the Hall of Fame. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Intelligence. Valuable industry data and analysis from independent experts, giving trading and investment professionals insight into where crucial industries stand today and where they may be heading next.
It is now 6:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's get a read on the health of the auto industry today with earnings from Ford. I'm John Tucker, and we get a preview from Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Analyst Kevin Tynan. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Are we revving up or running on empty in the auto industry?
Probably a little bit of both, you know, and it depends on the company. You know, Ford is in a position where I think that I'm starting to think that I might start to think that, you know, there's a little bit more, Ford's closer than they appear to be, or at least as closer than they're disclosing. You know, the company kind of gets knocked for, you know, maybe being a little bit lost in terms of regional performance, the product portfolio on the self-driving and electrification fronts. But I think there's probably a little bit more going on there. They're just being a little bit more rational and realistic with their disclosure.
Okay, closer to what?
Well, to sort of being in the race, you know, there's a lot of around the auto industry, there's a lot of talk of these sort of advanced technologies, be it in, you know, autonomous vehicles or electric vehicle penetration, but really we're not there yet. You know, if you look at battery electric vehicles, you know, it's 1% of the market globally. If you look at self-driving vehicles, they don't exist. You know, so I think there's a lot of I hate to call it hype, but there's hype around those future technologies, and Ford seems to be not as forthcoming with where they are in those technologies, and I think it's hurting them in the market.
Okay, I'm not sure why anybody cares, though. My daily commute suggests that the American love affair with pickups, big, nasty-looking pickup trucks, that remains firmly intact. Why not just focus on that?
Well, they are, but nobody wants to talk about that, right, John? Look at Tesla's valuation, right? So here's a company that battery electric vehicles are the future. We're all going to be driving them. Not actually, we won't be driving them. Autopilot will be driving them, and then you can share your car, and Uber can take the driver out of the car, and it just changes the whole transportation or mobility ecosystem and cost structure. So those are the things that the marketplace seems to be valuing, this sort of mobility utopia at some point in the future.
I mean, is the marketplace right?
I don't think so. I think you're right in the terms of, look, the trucks are paying the bills. And we've seen that movement from every automaker, right? Ford talked about killing sedans, keeping Mustang as probably the only car in the lineup. And then General Motors, similar. Fiat Chrysler's already done it. You know, they're 90% truck in the U.S. So I think while that is what is paying the bills, generating the earnings and the cash flow, you don't talk about that as much. You put out there where you are on your self-driving fleet or your electrification plans.
Okay. What does a partnership with Volkswagen suggest?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Some people coming out of Detroit talked about that as like that's advantage Volkswagen. But I would say, you know, if you look at Ford's sort of autonomous vehicle business, Argo AI, to me, aligning with a partner like Volkswagen, who really hasn't done a whole lot of work in that space, would seem to suggest that they're a little bit further ahead than people would give them credit for, right? GM Cruise, we saw the SoftBank investment, the Honda investment, and it gets this valuation like, hey, they're pretty far along. You know, Argo AI just hired a guy named Alex Roy, who's really a very outspoken driving enthusiast. He's the founder of the Human Driving Association. So I thought that was a really interesting hire, and it makes me think that Argo AI is actually talking and being more realistic about the capabilities of self-driving vehicles, and that we're not going to replace the human. We're actually going to augment their ability and capabilities by making vehicles safer in the interaction between human and machine.
What's the first thing you look at from the earnings when we get them from Ford? After the bell, I guess.
Yeah, and the numbers are going to be, you know, they sort of pre-announced last week in Detroit. You know, I would really be looking for some action in underperforming markets and regions. You know, they're really exposed, obviously, more so than General Motors to Europe, you know, sort of.
You mean like plant closures, layoffs,
yeah,
that sort of thing?
Yeah, sort of this retrenchment back into where the real profit centers are for them, which would be North America. But that's difficult for them because their product portfolio is smaller vehicles, you know, stuff that works in Europe, where General Motors wasn't as committed. So I think the unwinding of that is a much bigger task for Ford than it was for General Motors.
Kevin, always a pleasure. Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Analyst Kevin Tynan. And expect Ford earnings after the close of regular trading in New York today. Dow futures right now up 67. S&P futures up 6. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, John. Tune in to Bloomberg Surveillance this morning for live coverage from the World Economic Forum in Davos. Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow speak with Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan and a host of other special guests starting at 7 a.m. Wall Street time.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Global stocks are mixed to start the day. Following yesterday's 1.4% decline for the S&P 500, uncertainty over trade and politics continues to permeate global markets.
In Europe, the U.K. Parliament's moving closer to a plan to delay Brexit. We get that story from Bloomberg's Tim Ross.
John McDonnell, Labour's chief finance spokesman, told the BBC Labour is now increasingly likely to back a proposal to delay Brexit if the Prime Minister can't get a deal. With Labour support, the plan to extend that March 29th deadline is much more likely to be passed if it is put to a vote in Parliament next week. In London, Tim Ross, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tim, thank you. We're getting word that the Federal Reserve is examining how Deutsche Bank handled billions of dollars in suspicious transactions. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the very latest. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. Sources say the Fed's probe is scrutinizing whether Deutsche Bank's U.S. operations properly monitored money brought into the U.S. from a branch of Danske Bank. Danske has admitted that about $230 billion it handled may have been dirty. The U.S. does require banks operating under its jurisdiction to scrutinize clients in their dealings to detect potential money laundering. Deutsche Bank says it received several requests for information from regulators. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Here in the U.S., two dozen companies in the S&P 500 report earnings today, including United Technologies, Procter & Gamble, and Ford Motor.
Shares of IBM are up 6% in early trading. The company gave a positive forecast for 2019 and beat estimates for fourth quarter sales and earnings.
And the Bank of Japan left monetary policy unchanged as it cut its inflation outlook once again. The move underscores how far away the central bank's price target is and how few options it has for drawing closer.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And S&P futures are up 6.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 74 and NASDAQ futures up 17. The DAX in Germany is little change. The CAC in Paris up 0.25%. The FTSE 100 is down 0.33%. The Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.1% today, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong little changed. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 2.75%, the yield on the 2-year 2.59%, and the 30-year yield at 3.07%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 38 cents to $53.39 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.10 to $12.84.50 an ounce. The euro at $1.1363 and the yen 109.64. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It is 6:33 on Wall Street. This news update brought to you by the Breakers Palm Beach. This winter, paradise is just a short flight away, so get out of the cold and escape to the Breakers Palm Beach. Visit thebreakers.com or call 1-800-BREAKERS today. Here's Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you, Nathan. There is a chance to end the partial government shutdown now in its 33rd day. There will be two votes in the Senate this week, but there are no guarantees. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
This is a change of direction for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell as procedural vote on the president's plan will go first, followed by an amendment from Democrats that temporarily opens the government until February 8th, with talks about the border security outside of that. McConnell.
The bill would provide funding for each of the CBP's top 10 priority investments for border security.
Including money for the wall, Democrat Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says this will tell a major story.
What's in those bills was supported by Republicans already. And each of them
would reopen the government and allow us to continue our discussions on border security.
The vote's scheduled for Thursday. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Newark Airport says flight arrivals were briefly suspended yesterday because of reports of illegal drone activity. The drones were seen at about 3,500 feet up along the airport's financial approach.
There's some drone activity on the final, and it's at a critical point. We can't really run anybody right past the guy. So turn left heading 290, expect some delay vectors.
Audio from liveatc.com. The FAA is investigating. Authorities in upstate New York say they uncovered a plot to set off homemade bombs in a small town 200 miles away. They say four people allegedly planned to attack people in a Muslim community. A student reported a comment made at lunchtime at a school in Greece, New York. A day later, three young men and a teen were arrested. Greece Police Chief Patrick Phelan.
The firearms were found at various homes. The three improvised explosive devices were all located at one home, which is the home of the 16-year-old adolescent offender.
New York has passed a major new abortion rights law. The state legislature passed the Reproductive Health Act. Andrea Miller with the National Institute for Reproductive Health supports the law.
It removes the regulation of abortion from the criminal code and places it into the health code so that abortion will be regulated as a medical procedure as opposed to a criminal act.
Critics say they believe some of the provisions in the law would lead to more late-term abortions. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's coming up on 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, two Yankee pitchers heading to the Hall of Fame with Mariano Rivera. The only question was going to be whether or not he would be the first to ever go in with a unanimous vote. He was. That's what happens with a brilliant 19-year career, all in Yankee pinstripes, a record 652 saves, 42 more in the postseason when his ERA was 0.70. Big part of five Yankee championship teams. Mike Mussina actually did not win a championship in the Bronx. The Yanks won the World Series the year before he arrived and the year after he retired, but he's going to Cooperstown. He needed 75%. He got 77.
Surprising somewhat, I think. You know, I was steadily improving, but it was a pretty big jump from last year to this year. And I know people are paying attention and telling me, and I was paying attention to the trackers and all this stuff. And I know you get to the private ones and it drops off a little bit. So I knew it was going to be close, but it's pretty cool.
Mussina won 270 games, 8 years with the Yanks after 10 in Baltimore. Says he's not sure which hat he'll wear on his plaque. Edgar Martinez spent his entire career in Seattle. He was a DH. That seemed to be the reason it took him so long, but he made it in his final try. The late Roy Halladay, in his first attempt, he won Cy Young Awards with both Toronto and Philadelphia. The Australian Open, Novak Djokovic, the winner when KD Shikora had to retire in the second set. Semifinals, he'll face a relative unknown, Lucas Puy of France. Women's wins for Naomi Osaka and Carolina Pliskova, who stunned Serena Williams. Serena led 5-1 in the third set, lost the next six games. She blew four match points. Islanders in Chicago lost 3-2 in a shootout. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
John, thank you. Day 33 of the partial government shutdown. And if history's any guide, federal workers who are suing the government for not paying them during the lapse in appropriations may end up waiting a while. Nancy Lyons reports from the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Some 25,000 federal workers did win their case for not being paid during a 16-day shutdown in 2013, but they're still waiting for their money.
Waiting for the damages under the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Bloomberg Law's Louis Lebrecht says the delay is largely due to a complicated formula that was used to calculate the damages.
For all the hours in which they weren't paid on time, they were owed the minimum wage plus the amount of overtime, which is time and a half, based on their actual wages.
Using the previous formula this time, we're already looking at nearly $300 million in damages. In Washington, Nancy Lyons, Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you, Nancy. 6:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Maybe you've been tempted to do what President Donald Trump did this week and make light of the bitterly cold weather in the midst of global warming. Trump tweeted that it wouldn't be bad to have a little of that good old-fashioned global warming right now. Actually, there's no irony that cold weather can strike a warming world. Never mind that it's a time-tested line for Trump. He used the same mockery in December of 2017, and the following month he expanded on it.
The ice caps were going to melt. They were going to be gone by now, but now they're setting records, okay? They're at a record level.
No irony there either. The polar ice caps are melting at record levels. And Trump's latest tweet confused the short-term local fluctuations of weather and climate, which is the long-term aggregate of everything that happens weather-wise in an area or globally. It's like the difference between a person's disposition and a fleeting mood. Climate experts say a January cold snap across many U.S. states doesn't contradict the planet's long-term warming trend. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thank you, Bob. It is 6:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
France's data protection regulator demanded that Google pay a record fine for violating Europe's expansive new privacy rules. The regulator alleges that Google fails to adequately explain how it collects data to offer personalized advertising. The regulators may merely want to make an example of Google, or perhaps the ruling portends a broader crackdown on digital advertising. But whose interests would that serve? A better approach would be a certification regime on the model of the information fiduciary standard. Companies would agree to a set of best practices in return for a regulatory stamp of approval. Then consumers would know when their data is in good hands. Such a system would allow new businesses to grow unencumbered by impossible rules, and regulators would have less to do, which is a good thing. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Futures moving higher with S&P futures up 7 points now. Dow futures ahead by 80 and NASDAQ futures up 19 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up, the morning call brought to you by Columbia Bank. Yield Plus Checking from Columbia Bank takes the stable growth of a high-rate CD and combines it with the freedom of a checking account. Visit a branch today or ColumbiaBankOnline.com. Count on Columbia.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:47 on Wall Street, and futures are moving higher this morning. We go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. Like you said, U.S. futures are trading higher right now, helped by 6% pre-market gains in IBM. Dow futures currently up 86 points. S&P's gained 7, while the NASDAQ futures climbed by 21. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.76%. Oil is gaining, while Shanghai was a little changed overnight. And European markets are trading mostly higher, led by 1% gains in Spain. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 10 o'clock, the Richmond Fed. And after the bell last night, IBM beat estimates. Cloud revenue was up 12%. And regarding earnings this morning, semi-equipment maker ASML forecast Q1 sales well below estimates. And look for Procter & Gamble to report around 7 a.m., Kimberly-Clark around 7:30. In deal news, J&J is said to mull buying robotic surgery firm Auris Health. And wrapping things up, Merck was downgraded to market perform over at BMO. AGCO downgraded to underweight at Barclays. Walmart was upgraded to overweight at Morgan Stanley. And Tesla downgraded to underperform over at RBC. Live from the First Rebecca News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, thanks, Bill. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And you did mention Walmart upgraded. Shares are up 1.2% right now in early trading. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, two different votes are set in the Senate tomorrow with the aim to end the partial government shutdown. One vote will be on the bill, including President Trump's demand for funding a border wall in exchange for temporary protections for some immigrants. A second vote is set for a measure already passed by the Democratic-controlled House to reopen the government through February 8th. It does not allow money for a border wall, but it gives both sides more time to talk. In the NHL, the Islanders lost in a shootout. The Capitals lost in overtime to the Sharks. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg Terminal, former Yankees closer Mariano Rivera, baseball's all-time saves leader, has become the game's first unanimous Hall of Fame selection. Talking about the Mo.
Rivera received all 425 votes in balloting by the Baseball Writers Association of America. He had 625 regular season saves during his 19-year career, spent entirely with the Yanks. Former Yankees and Orioles pitcher Mike Mussina also made the Hall of Fame along with Roy Halladay and Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, you got to say, for the all-time saves leader, what a way to close out a career, the end of a career, with a unanimous Hall of Fame induction. And there's little disputing.
Yeah.
Mariano Rivera was amazing.
Oh, man, he was great. So congratulations
indeed.
To you.
Indeed.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include day 33 of the partial government shutdown. That's not closed yet. President Trump will discuss his immigration plan with two groups today, state, local, and community leaders, along with conservative leaders. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi takes part in the winter meeting of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. That kicks off today in Washington. And the Senate has teed up votes on competing bills to reopen the federal government. Let's get more on that from Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Is this the way forward in the Senate, Kate?
I think the reason why people are so focused on this movement in the Senate is that's the first that we've seen. I don't think that anyone thinks that either of these plans that are on the table now are going to end up being the direct path to reopening the government. In fact, it's unlikely that either proposal advances tomorrow. I think the sense is that perhaps this will clear the deck of these sort of competing partisan proposals and perhaps spur some new negotiations towards a deal that could actually reopen the government.
Yeah, so this will be the first time then that we've seen Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell make a move in terms of getting the government reopened. Now into the second month of this partial government shutdown, is that alone a reason to take note of this?
I think it certainly is. You know, when we've had these sort of past partisan disputes that have caused log jams in Washington, often McConnell is the person who's behind what the eventual solution comes to be. And so I think that he's someone that's good at crafting ways out of these types of situations. And the fact that he sat on the sidelines so far, I think, has been indicative of a sense that this could go on for a very long time. I think now that we're seeing the Senate beginning to take action, that is an indication both that perhaps Republicans are feeling the pressure to get something done and reopen the government as the fallout from the shutdown is becoming more and more extreme, and also indicates that McConnell may be approaching a place where he might take a more active role in trying to craft that solution.
Yeah, and you mentioned that this sort of clears the decks in terms of what could be put forward in terms of a solution. I mean, what could that solution look like at this point? I mean, we've seen President Trump dig in at this point on the $5.7 billion number. I mean, is there any wiggle room there?
I think one of the complicating factors, there's a number of them, obviously, but one of the complicating factors is that from the sounds of it, the negotiators aren't even exactly sure where the president stands in terms of what he's be willing to accept. Because if you talk to one Trump aide, he said that they would say that he wouldn't accept anything short of the $5.7 billion that he's been demanding. But then if you talk to a different Trump aide, they might indicate that there is some wiggle room. So I think that has been one of the main challenges of the negotiation, is that it's a bit unclear what the White House's red lines on this are, and that makes crafting a deal very complicated. It's not surprising, I guess, in the sense that this is something that we've seen on a host of different issues, where really the president, only the president himself, knows what he would or would not accept, and there's not necessarily a clear position on that. So I think that's something that will continue to be a problem and continue to potentially stymie negotiations, even if everyone agrees they want to find a solution.
Now, so where does this go from here, do you think? I mean, they're going to put two competing bills on the floor tomorrow, and you need 60 votes to pass either of them in the Senate. So what next?
That's right. And I think the sense is that, so one of the plans is Trump's proposal, essentially, that he unveiled over the weekend. And I think that was crafted specifically to try to peel off some moderate Democrats with a few sweeteners along the lines of specifically the 3-year protections for DACA recipients. And I think that the sense is that Democrats are probably going to vote that one down. Then there's a Democratic proposal that is unlikely to get, that would reopen the government through February 8th, that's unlikely to get support from the amount of Republicans that would be needed to move in that direction. So I think that the sense advances once it's clear that neither of those plans has the 60 votes that it needs to advance, then it's sort of back to the drawing board to figure out if there's a way to sort of rejigger the puzzle pieces to try to craft a path to 60 and therefore get something back to the House for potentially final approval.
In the meantime, as the shutdown goes on, the Trump administration has called back some but not all government workers to work without pay. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this is an example of where the White House has a bit of flexibility here, because I think that we're seeing the president sort of strategically from a political standpoint potentially calling back certain workers to work on issues that are either important to him or that are particularly politically perilous. For example, you know, folks who work at the IRS, because there's a sense that people would be very unhappy if their tax returns are delayed, their tax refunds are delayed. And so, you know, there's a sense that those people are being called back to make sure that to kind of minimize the political fallout, and also that people are being called back to work on programs that are popular within the Trump administration, but that the administration's more than happy to let programs that it might not be as supportive of sort of go dark during the shutdown.
But in about 30 seconds here, when you're calling back some but not all workers, depending on what program they might be working on, that opens the administration to not only political but legal criticism, no?
It certainly does, and I think that, you know, while the focus right now, I think, in a lot of folks' mind is the path to reopening the government, I think that there's going to be a lot of sort of looking back after the shutdown eventually does end to see, you know, what kind of potentially dangerous precedents were either established or shattered during the shutdown. And, you know, it may have long lasting implications for future spending disputes going forward.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thanks as always. You can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal NI shutdown for the latest on what's happening in Washington. You can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio as well in D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. 6:56 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Karen, the fight for $15 movement has pushed wages higher in cities like Seattle and New York. In Congress, Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Bobby Scott recently unveiled legislation that would increase the federal minimum wage to $15 by 2024. New Jersey leaders say they finally figured out how to phase in a $15 minimum wage, but it's all prompting a warning from business groups that it could be too much too soon. Loria Elmbach, the state director of the NFIB in New Jersey, tells Bloomberg Law it just might not be feasible. The simple economic reality, she says, which nobody seems to understand, is that the small business owner has relatively small profits and they can't pay more for labor costs. Cheryl Moorman, owner of CS Gymnastics in Flanders, New Jersey, says she's not sure how she's going to cope. She says lawmakers don't understand what's going on outside their little bubble. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right, John, thank you. We're watching earnings from United Technologies cross the Bloomberg. Fourth quarter profit beat analyst estimates, although it says it sees for the year profit coming in below analyst estimates. So we'll be watching those shares in early trading. Some mixed results there. We are straight ahead. Bloomberg Surveillance, Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. They are having live coverage from the World Economic Forum in Davos. They will be speaking with Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan and a host of other special guests. And that's all straight ahead right here on Bloomberg Radio. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.